I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The FT.
Hello and welcome to the FT Arts Podcast. I'm Raphael Abraham, and this week we'll be discussing the rise and rise of rap. From its modest beginnings on the mean streets of the Bronx in the late 70s, to stadium-filling tours and platinum albums, today's rappers are millionaires with business empires that extend well beyond music. Kanye West has described Watch the Throne, his joint album with Jay-Z, as luxury rap, and on May the 18th, the pair descends on London's O2 Arena for 5 nights and then tours the UK. I'm joined in the studio by FT pop critics Ludovic Hunter-Tilney and Richard Clayton, but before I turn to them, let's listen to the first rap hit from 1979, The Sugar Hill Gang with Rapper's Delight.
You see, I'm 6'1" and I'm tons of fun, and I guess to a D. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. I got bodyguards, I got 2 big guns that definitely ain't the whack. I got a Lincoln Continental and a some new Cadillac. So after school, I take a dip in the pool, which is really on the wall. I got a color TV so I can see the Knicks play basketball.
Now compare that to the opening of Niggas in Paris from Watch the Throne. For those of you who don't know, Ball So Hard refers to a thug who's got rich originally through playing basketball.
So I ball so hard, niggas wanna find me. First, gotta find me. What's 50 grand to a mother like me? Can you please remind me? Ball so hard, the craze. Y'all don't know that, don't craze. And as we go, 0 for 82 when I look at you like you're crazy. Ball so hard. We ain't even Popey here. Ball so hard since we here. It's only right that we be fair. Psycho, I'm libo to go Michael. Take your pick. Jackson, Tyson, Jordan, game 6.
Ludo, the Sugar Hill Gang rap about having a colour TV while Jay-Z says, what's 50 grand to a mother effer like me? Has luxury rap lost touch with its roots, perhaps?
We can see a definite amplification in tone in terms of the material life being bragged about. Rap music has always had this element of the braggadocio, where you show off how successful you are. Rapper's Delight, which came out over 30 years ago, has this at a now seeming very modest level of achievement, a colour TV, a dip in a pool. We suspect it could well be the public baths somewhere in the, somewhere in the Bronx. And Watch the Throne, the joint album between the two sort of leading mainstream rappers of the day, Jay-Z, the mogul turned superstar rapper, and Kanye West, who's the sort of self-styled creative genius of rap. The two of them have come together and produced this remarkable document of opulent living in recession-era America, where the brands are things like Rolls-Royce, Hublot, Benz, Porsche, the Le Maurice luxury hotel in Paris. I mean, it could be characterized as the How to Spend It of hip-hop.
Indeed, it could. Richard, do you think rap can claim to still be keeping it real?
Well, there are other aspects of rap than this one. I suppose these guys are basically representing the 1% who we hear a lot about in the pages of the paper. To adapt Gil Scott-Heron, the revolution will be commercialised. Jay-Z and his wife Beyoncé, of course, have even trademarked their daughter Blue Ivy Carter's name, although they say that's more about a protective thing for people ripping off their brand. But obviously there might be some Blue Ivy products in a few years' time. Yes, I mean, it's quite amazing that this kind of insurgent party music from the Bronx, basically made by immigrant Jamaicans taking over the means of production with 2 turntables and a microphone, has become the soundtrack to this kind of consumption. But then money has always been part of hip-hop's game. I think it was N.W.A. who said, life ain't nothing but bitches and money. Obviously, they were coming from a rather more stark economic situation than Jay-Z currently finds himself in. But then elsewhere on that track, Niggas in Paris, he talks about saying, if you've escaped what I've escaped, you'd be in Paris getting effed up too. So can we really grumble with that sort of life trajectory. I don't know.
It's a music that almost celebrates rap's transformation into this huge multi-billion dollar industry, if you like. So in that sense, it becomes decoupled from what's going on in the world around it. Watch the Throne, when it came out last August, it came out in the same week that the US lost its AAA credit rating and over $1 trillion were wiped off the value of Wall Street in the worst day of trading since the 2008 financial crisis. There's a stark disconnection between what this album preaches and the world in which it has come into being. But it seems to me that, in fact, what it's really celebrating is the rise of hip-hop, the rise of this black created form of music into this sort of world-beating genre.
Yes, I mean, looking at basically small businessmen, entrepreneurs, aren't you? I mean, the original rap labels were started out like that, and now they have become corporate entities. But this kind of luxury rap, as we're calling it, again, isn't the only type of rap around. There's lots of sort of regional differences in rap, with the Dirty South thing that came out of Alabama and Memphis and is still very big. You get these sort of dance crazes that come up now and again, things like juke and footworking. I think it was from Chicago. I mean, don't ask me to do any of the moves. So there's a lot of the kind of youth upsurge of stuff is still there.
Ludo, you recently compared rap in its current state, awash with money, with the sort of bloated supergroups of rock in the 70s. Do you think we could see a backlash against that, as we did with sort of the rise of punk rock in the 70s or alternative in the 80s?
I'm not sure there will be a backlash against that particular trend. There are bands around now, a younger generation of rappers coming through. I mean, Odd Future are one who've got a lot of column inches. They're being compared to the Sex Pistols. They create a lot of outrage through their violent lyrics and sort of misogynist lyrics. And the music is very sort of abrasive, impressive in many ways, while the lyrics aren't. They've been compared to the Sex Pistols, but I think the comparison sort of runs out of steam because they don't really have any alternative way of seeing the world. There's nothing which is actually a sort of critique of the ultra materialism of Jay-Z and Kanye West. It's just more like a kind of frat boy style rap,
yeah,
which
is a gang, aren't they? Like Wu-Tang Clan, where as well there's loads of members with outlandish names and they all have side projects and all that sort of stuff.
Wu-Tang Clan are a good example because they did bring the rap collective back into, or the last flowering of the rap collective, whereas now you have a lot of it's all very individualist. You have Jay-Z and Kanye West, but they're coming together as two very big stars. It's not the idea, it's a collaboration, but it's not really the idea like the band, where you have a multitude of voices. When I spoke to Chuck D of Public Enemy for an article on this theme recently, he bemoaned the fact that the rap group had disappeared and they had all become highly individualized. And Odd Future are bringing that back. But the Wu-Tang Clan, the great sort of New York band from the 90s who did this sort of hardcore street hop, also had managed to bundle all of their different members off into quite lucrative solo careers and also had clothing ranges and such like. So it was as if it was like a sort of conglomerate. The collective, in fact, in rap terms, is often a conglomerate.
Richard, do you see anyone who's really still doing that kind of socially, politically conscious rap nowadays?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there is a guy called Evidence who was originally part of the Dilated Peoples group, who was sort of seen in that light, I suppose, in the late 90s. He's now had an album out last year called Cats and Dogs, where he does address some of the economic situation going on. There's a track called Well Runs Dry, which I think we can hear now, actually.
Money is the underpinning of our society.
Here on out, you're looking at another Great Depression.
This last year has been disastrous financially.
Yo, times have dried and the well went first. Starving to death? Nah, I think I'm dying of thirst. I get inspired on a momentary basis. A live wire, been flown so many places.
Now, this is actually one of the better tracks of the album, which is a decent album. I mean, it's got DJ Premier on there, who was part of Gangstar doing the beats. But it's also, to my mind, really earnest and a bit plodding and dull. So you can see why the likes of Kanye are so successful, because they're much more Catholic in their tastes in terms of the samples they use. And at the same time, why guys like Odd Future and other young rappers like Danny Brown are coming through, being much more scurrilous in and extreme in their lyrical content with, you know, sex and drugs and so forth, because it's just a bit boring being conscious rapper.
I think that's very true. I think that is a problem with conscious rap, and partly it's also because there's this sort of, it has this attraction to jazz. There's a sort of jazzy noodling quality, which can end up being a little bit sort of We're just a bit dull.
Do you think nowadays, whereas maybe in the past it was more about the rapping and about the verses, it's more now it's about having a catchy chorus and actually writing hits rather than just rapping?
Yeah, I think that the way that the hook, the song's hook, has become so sort of a way of catching people's attention in the ringtone era, with just like wanting people feeling that they're changing radio stations all the time. So a song really gets more and more grabby. So yeah, I think that that's a very, and I think that rap is particularly prone to that, it has to be said. The other extreme from the conscious rappers with their jazzy verses channeling the Last Poets, you can also have the sort of really brash types who've got the latest David Guetta remix and some hammering hook that just leaves sort of your brain cells clamoring to leave your head.
I think what they call the golden age of hip-hop, which was basically sort of the late 80s to mid-90s, had that kind of crate digging aesthetic of the real vinyl junkie, of a real sort of sense of scholarship in the beats and the breaks that you're turning up, whereas now it's much more scattershot in terms of the influences that people will have, not least in terms of more sort of recondite samples, like ELO or even Kenny Loggins, I think, was sampled on one. And a more recent track last year had a sort of indie pop sample from a band called Cassiotone for the Painfully Alone. But yeah, just basically much broader. And all the rave thing as well, actually. And how dubstep and grime from the UK are actually being seen in terms of pure beat making as possibly even ahead of the Yanks.
Ludo, you're going to the show on Friday. I just wonder, how do you think rap translates to that sort of big arena show? Do you think that works?
I think that that's Friday, May the 18th. It's the first of five nights at the O2 Arena that Kanye and Jay-Z will be playing. It's the start of the European leg of their Watch the Throne tour, the US leg having grossed $48 million so far, so enough to keep them in private jets and Hublot watches and etc. for the time being, at any rate. It will be a boom week for the London's top end service industries. I am looking forward to it, in fact, because I think that the album, whilst pretty obnoxious, also has a sort of messy charisma about it. And as we could hear on the song we played, the production's pretty tight on the best songs. You know, it's got a sort of swagger. The swagger about it does come across pretty powerfully. And I think that the rap has now moved into this sort of stadium entertainment, led by Jay-Z, who had his triumphant performance at Glastonbury in 2008 when he headlined. There were many rockers were outraged, such as Noel Gallagher, but he managed to really storm the place. So I think that they've taken it into this large arena very successfully.
And I think it's become more self-reflexive as well, hasn't it? I mean, obviously, rap has always been about sort of self-assertion and the self-realization of these guys coming, you know, from often very poor backgrounds and asserting themselves on the world. But now they've got sort of degree of angst that they didn't have before, I think, you know, not least with Jay-Z, but Drake and J. Cole and other people like that, aren't they? They're really sort of pondering their own sort of...
But Drake's album, Thank Me Later, I was infamous for having over 400 uses of the first person pronoun.
There you
go. Can't stop talking about himself, that man.
There you go. So yeah, there's that sort of more introspective side of it going on. But then it's also, and I think where it perhaps rap does have more of a dead end is, I'm going to sound like Lord Leveson here trying to explain something, but I gather there's a term called trapping, which is basically about coke dealing. If you're a trapper, you're a coke dealer. And people like young Jeezy really stuck in this rut of sort of extolling the thug life. And there was a great sort of rejoinder to that by a young rapper called Christmas with a K last year, because he said, "Y'all ain't all rapping, somebody's lying, because if everyone's selling it, then who the F is buying?" So this idea of, you know, we can't all be doing these gangster poses, because someone has to be, you know, out there receiving this kind of stuff. And I think that shows how redundant that level of pursuit of the thug image has got.
I wonder actually about the sort of longevity of rappers, because obviously some of the people that we're talking about, Chuck D, you mentioned, is 51, Dr. Dre's 47. You know, how easy is it to have longevity in rap? And are we going to see these guys still touring in 20 years, doing Rolling Stones type hip hop tours?
Well, I spoke with Chuck D. He said that was his dream, basically, to follow the classic rock model where radio stations would promote the music. You get new, younger listeners in, as well as the core audience he wants to have for his touring. It's called the Legends of Hip Hop, where Public Enemy and other legends of the music will be going around. I think that the sort of older generations currently, that crew are a bit slightly similar to the sort of 50s rock and roll bunch, who got slightly sort of pushed to one side after the 60s, you know, sort of slightly forgotten about. So you still get Chuck Berry touring around in tiny venues, even though he more or less invented rock and roll. But the current, at the moment, I mean, Jay-Z is 41, I think. Kanye's in his mid-30s. I think that you've now got this sort of, they're the ones really reaping the reward. They've established themselves. And I think that we could see certainly see them taking it on way into middle age and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I feel slightly queasy with three middle-class white guys here sitting around the table talking about what was called Black America CNN, wasn't it, by Chuck D. But it does seem as though that more politicised side of rap has fallen by the wayside, possibly in the scramble for more and more material wealth. And that's something that's not just pertinent to hip-hop, but the whole sort of boom era, really, wasn't it?
President Obama has been described as the first hip-hop generation president.
Well, that's true.
Clinton
that's true.
Was the first rock and roll generation president. We now have the first hip-hop generation. That doesn't
that's
seem
true.
To me to be a sort of dissociation from politics.
No, in fact, well, perhaps it's because that's happened, that you know, the more political sort of thrust of it has perhaps, you know, fallen away. And it's interesting how that some of the more public hand-wringing about the gangster image, you know, not least within the black community, has sort of, again, not been so prevalent since Obama's been in power. So perhaps people are trying to move away from that image and have more positive role models, obviously, of black success.
Well, I'm afraid our time's up. Thank you to Ludovic Hunter-Tilney and Richard Clayton, and to Griselda Murray-Brown, who produced the Arts Podcast. We'll play you out with DJ Shadow's Why Hip Hop Sucks in 96, which some people may still agree with in 2012.
It's the money.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.